welcome to another episode of your favorite music podcast, Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock. And with me on the other line, he wants new friends, but they don't want him. It's Nick Moreau. What's up, Nick?
What's up, Hunter? What's up, man? Happy to be back.
It's good to talk to you. It's, under very similar circumstances to the last time we spoke.
Yeah, I feel like it's the same shit, different room.
Have you been, you've been really like touching up on your cooking skills though, I see. Yeah?
I have. I am actually looking for some good, I'm thinking more about cooking music. We haven't talked too much about cooking music lately, but I did put on like one of Questlove's like live YouTube mixes that he's putting out, I think daily almost, while I was cooking the other day, and that was pretty good. I'm not really a big fan of reggae, but this was like a roots reggae 70s thing. I enjoyed it for the most part. It was good cooking music. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a time where I thought we were getting kind of lazy and calling everything good cooking music, but, you know, maybe we were just going through a period of time where there was a few records that that sounded good. There was, you know, we talked about that Krungbin record a couple years ago, and they put out an EP recently that I've listened to it once, and it's with Gary Clark Jr.,
singer-songwriter.
So it's, you know, they're his basically, in effect, his backing band. But I bet that would be pretty good cooking music.
Yeah.
I think, for me, it's been all just a lot of silence while I've been cooking. I love cooking, but it's starting to feel oppressive to me a little bit. Because I'm cooking every meal. We're not lucky enough to have a dishwasher, so I'm just doing dishes and cooking constantly all day long. So it's starting to lose some of its zen properties that cooking had for me. I need to find something to keep it centered and balanced.
Well, so, you know, on the cooking music, I agree. I tested myself to see if we were being lazy and kind of calling everything good cooking music, and I did put the Porridge Radio album, Every Bad, as my background for cooking, and it wasn't a soothing cooking experience I was looking. So I think we're back on track. On the cooking thing though, you know, I was feeling like you, and what I started doing is and I never do this. Remember, people do this when there's no quarantine, and God bless you, but I made a menu for the week, basically exactly what we're eating every meal for the
and
week.
You stuck and to I put it?
And I put it in the calendar. And I'm wow. And we're doing it. So it's funny because it actually like doesn't really, it's pretty soothing because I always know what to make. I never have to think about it.
Yeah.
I buy the ingredients once a week for the most part. If it's, you know, there's seafood and stuff, obviously it's a little more complicated, but yeah, that's a tip I have for you. If you're looking for some inspiration in the kitchen.
So are you using, like, by the end of the week, are you using vegetables that have more of a shelf life to them? Perhaps your potatoes and radishes and
exactly
and eggplant at the end of the week and the fresher things towards the beginning of the week?
Exactly. So at the end of the week, I'll use mostly like carrots and potatoes. Like we're making a Japanese curry, I think on Wednesday, and I went grocery shopping, I think, on Thursday. And I'm keeping the potatoes and carrots for that. Whereas, you know, my lettuce, spinach and stuff, I'll make now.
There you go. You know, I don't have a plan. It's been quesadillas nonstop.
These are good.
It's good. The one-year-old likes quesadillas quite a bit, so
it's a staple.
That's what we're doing. We're even, you know, getting some fresh tortillas from Mexican restaurants around here, as well as some produce. So that's kind of nice too.
Nice.
Nice. But you know, at least I have to say, at least the music has been pretty good. We were talking about Porridge Radio. That album feels a little too real for me right now, I think. It's hard to I don't want to necessarily put, it's pretty intense, and I don't know if I want to put myself in that headspace that often right now. So
yeah.
So I think, you know, the circumstances are really influential to what music is hitting right now. But the last week, a couple weeks, there's been a lot of albums that I was looking forward to and have been listening to. I think it's going to slow down a little bit coming up, but still a lot for us to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, this last 2 weeks have been, I mean, I can't believe the amount of big releases we've had and quality music we've had. I'm thankful for it, to be honest. If there wasn't that, it'd be even bleaker in this household.
Yeah, and like high profile releases from artists that have not put anything out in quite a long time. We're gonna talk in just a few minutes about the first album from The Strokes in, I think, 7 years. Mm-hmm. Since Come Down Machine. But I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about this new Fiona Apple album right at the top of the show here.
Yeah.
And it's only been out for less than 48 hours now. So, we can talk about it a little bit, but I know it's something that, especially for me, for sure, I'm still digesting and kind of wrapping my head around, but it's getting like mind-blowing press, and I've seen already some backlash to the album, so it seems it's definitely ripe for discussion. This is her first album, I think, since 2012. I mean, so yeah. 1 year longer than The Strokes, 8 years, and the last album was The Idler Wheel. Has a much longer title than that, like as some of her albums do. That was, to be honest, that is probably my favorite Fiona Apple album. I kind of think that she's been getting better and better as she goes along. But I wonder, some of it has to do with how infrequently she puts herself out there.
Mm-hmm.
This new album is called Fetch the Bolt Cutters. Have you had a chance to listen to it since it's been released a couple days ago?
Yeah, I've listened to it a lot, actually. I can't remember the last time I listened to an album that much in 2 days. I probably listened to it 6 or 7 times now. I think, to your point, like, I still don't think I've wrapped my head around it, but I think every listen I've appreciated and liked it better. I'm quite obsessed with it, to be honest. I can't, like, it's really hard to, I mean, it's kind of her signature, but like every song sounds so different, yet it's still like a clear Fiona Apple song. Like the change in time signatures and it's every song is just so interesting and so amazing. Like, and lyrically, I think she's kind of at the top of her game with this one.
She's finding ways to with her lyrics. Like, I'm not even at the level where I understand too much of what she's talking about, but the way she puts so many words into some of these songs, it's kind of like, wow, like, I'm gonna need some time with this.
And even on the first listen, I kept checking myself where, talking about the time signatures, if it was a new song.
Yeah.
It felt like, sometimes, even though, like, it makes more sense now, but, like, at the time, like, it's really an odd album to dig. Like, it's so dense, like, the first time is, it's almost tough to go through the whole thing. And mm-hmm. then
it's quite long too. It's like an hour long, and longer than a lot of the records we've been listening to and talking about on the show recently.
Yeah. It's funny because it is an hour long, but now it almost like it passes by so quickly, but the first time it was a long hour. And now I breeze through.
When I've been reading like some people's reactions, and of course, like I think it's hard to, I think a lot of this is more of a question of like music journalism and music criticism than the nature of the album. But if you get the 10 out of 10 review from Pitchfork, and they have a habit of, they've only been doing that once a decade for the past 20 years, mm-hmm. it's going to cause people to go into the album a little bit differently, I think. I read that review and from what I've listened to the album, it's a little hyperbolic in the way that they talk about it being like something that it's never been done before or totally new, because to me it's not that different from the direction that she's been going right. over like the past couple albums. And like there's the super like analog feel to it with all the clanking, crashing percussion on it. That, like,
the dogs,
I don't know,
barking.
How many like actual drums are on this album, or if it's just dogs barking and her banging on the floor with wooden spoons. Which I think is, super charming. And I get like the Tom Waits kind of comparison with it. But I just think it's funny to suggest that it is like a completely new sound or new kind of music. But I do, she is an extraordinary like as songwriter and singer and producer and everything. So, you know, it's definitely a really good album. I need to live with it longer. It's also like, I do find some of Fiona Apple's music to be uplifting, but mm-hmm. it's also like maybe trying to stay sane and happy in quarantine.
Yeah.
Not getting enough natural light. I don't know if she's the voice that I want inside my head all the time.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true. I agree with you. I mean, I think the Pitchfork review is, I just think that they were trying to make a statement. I'm trying to think if it tainted my view of it. But I think that if I think about the other, you know, tens they've given, I tend to agree that this is probably not like a Kid A or Yankee Hotel Foxtrot or, you know, Dark Twisted Fantasy. But who knows, you know, with time, maybe.
And from what I understand, you know, for Pitchfork, their score is an editorial decision. So somebody writes the review, but the editor gives it a score. It's the score isn't given by the person who writes the actual review.
Yeah.
If that's true. And also, to be fair, this is getting incredible reviews across the board from everybody. But I just think that, like, the first, because the album drops and the review came out at the same time, you know, if you're online, like, so much of the chatter was about this album got a 10 out of 10. It's the first one in a decade. Does it deserve it? It has to, you know, hold up to that standard for people the first time they hear it. Or, you know, it's just something for people on the internet to argue about that doesn't mean anything. But I am wondering if some people are going to dismiss this record just because they listened to it once or something and they're like, oh, this is not like something I've never heard before. This is not like a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, regardless of the review, I think it's a fantastic album and like really caught me by surprise. First, that she was releasing a new record, you know, announced it so not too long ago. And then the fact that it's that good, I guess I'm not surprised that Fiona Apple put a good record out, but I was thinking we're close to the mid-year. I kind of had a top five in my head, and, you know, the last couple weeks kind of made me rethink a little bit of it.
Well, like, I think I texted you this sometime in the last week that I have, like, a top five for the year so far right now in mid-April that I would be very happy with, I think, at the end of the year already. So,
oh, for sure.
Like, pretty cool year. An album that, you know, I don't know, you know, by the standards of which I put together my list at the end of the year, it might not make it because I tend not to include artists over and over again. Mm-hmm. But Laura Marling also put out an album without much notice the week before Fiona. It's the same week as The Strokes, and called Song for Our Daughter. That is another fantastic Laura Marling album. It's kind of back to her earlier music. It's a little bit, you know, she did that Project Lump and a couple like more rockier albums, but it's a really beautiful record. And I think it would make a nice come down maybe after listening to Fiona Apple.
I kind of wish those releases were separate, more separate.
I kind of do too. I feel like I wanted to. That's what I was kind of trying to get out of the top of the show here. I feel like there's too much happening in the last couple weeks.
Yeah,
you know, for me, it like, and I'm worried that we're gonna, you know, it's gonna be feast and fallow. But
yeah, you know, Nine Inch Nails might release three more instrumental albums. this Laura Marling album is great. I really would have wished it wasn't the same week as The Strokes as well. Now I wish it really wasn't as close to kind of Fiona Apple's record. But I have to say, in the last 2 weeks, the amount of like kind of female kind of singer albums that have come out, good ones, is pretty astounding.
I think there's a lot of stuff, man. I knew we were going to talk about The Strokes this week, so I really gave that one my full attention over the past week, and I need to catch up on some other things.
Yeah,
the Milena Zavala album came out this past week too. She's somebody I think we both had her last album in, like, our
number
top 10.
Four. I think she might have been album of the year for the podcast since she was both high up in our top 10.
You're right. Yeah. Her follow up to Elisa is called I think it's called La Yara, mm-hmm. and I'm excited to listen to that one some more too. So basically, we have a lot more listening to do to catch up with the last few weeks.
And maybe we have to do a follow up on Fiona Apple. I think she probably deserves.
Yeah, I need to. Yeah. I can't wait to dig into that record a little bit more. But why don't we go ahead and dig into the Strokes record, Nick? This is the new Abnormal. This is their their sixth full length.
Sixth full length.
I don't know how to start this. You are, the Strokes are a complicated band. They have a really interesting legacy. The past decade has been a very strange time for them. Mm-hmm. We've talked about, at length about Julian Casablancas and when we were talking about the Last Voids record.
Yeah.
And probably went into some of our history on where we come at the Strokes. But what was your level of anticipation for this album?
I was pretty I was happy there was a new Strokes album. I was excited, but it was also like waiting for the critical like panning of the album. I was just waiting, like I knew this album can get a fair shake, to be honest. I don't think at this point the Strokes can put out anything that is that would be critically applauded and like as a consensus. But my level, I was hoping for, from what I heard from The Voids and the fact that, they kind of announced that the last decade was kind of an off 10 years for them, and they still released two records that weren't great, but not terrible, I would say. I was hoping that, this would be kind of a return to form, maybe something new, maybe something more in the lines of The Voids, but still with kind of a Albert Hammond, kind of Nick Valenci guitar licks. So yeah, that's kind of where I stood. What about you?
Well, that's funny, because I sort of felt the opposite about the lead into this album, in that I really thought it was going to be seen as, and this without having heard, well, I guess I maybe had heard Out the Door at this point, the first single they released. But the energy around it, the fact that they were seeming like sort of having normal tour dates, the aesthetic behind it, when they played the Bernie Sanders rally like a month ago, and they just looked different. It seemed like they were actually geared up for a proper album release.
Yeah.
And maybe like this was an album that they were more proud of than the last few. Cause to be honest, I was going back and thinking about it. I heard Angles and was quite disappointed with it. I remember when it first went, like the first listen of it. I remember being with my brother, we were on a road trip, the desert, to go to Indian Wells tennis tournament. So I think they tend to put out albums, I guess, in March or April, the last few. And, I don't think I ever heard Come Down Machine all the way through. I just thought it seemed like time for them, like if they're gonna actually make the attempt to come back together, that it would at least be seen as I think people were ready for them to like give them a little more leeway critically. So I sort of thought it was going to be well received before hearing much of it.
I tend to agree. I didn't think it would be greatly received, but I thought the album would be better than the last two. I also I agree. It seemed to me like the appearance was that they were happy to be the Strokes again.
Yeah.
Which, they're actually playing dates rather than just festivals. It feels like there's a little bit of care behind it. I like the new aesthetic, to your point, the idea of self reinvention. But then remember, like Julian Casablancas' comments about like his heart is he cares more about The Voids than The Strokes wasn't that long ago.
No, and I think that's been my problem with this band for a while. I think since their first record, is it kind of seems like they don't all want to be there. And I don't know if that comes from him. And I know there is tension between him being like the songwriter, the primary songwriter in the band, and some of the other guys kind of wanting to contribute in that way as well. And he just sort of seemed like he was snoozing through the last couple records. I know this is like a very unpopular opinion, but his solo record, Phases of the Young, is one of my favorite things that Julian Casablancas has ever done. And I kind of like got into, you know, thought about the Strokes in a different way after I got into that record. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I think he's got, you know, he's got a way with a tune that was obvious on that, that was not so much on the last couple Strokes records. So what do you think? Did this meet your expectations?
I think it's their third best record. I think the first two are in a class of their own, and I don't think they can ever capture that Lightning in a Bottle, because it was a moment in time. But if you put that record as their third record, and at that time, I think, you know, it would have been critically acclaimed. I think
those records mean a lot to indie rock fans in their 30s.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, from the moment you turn it on, the adults are talking, the first track, it feels like a Stroke song. Like, it sounds so much like a Stroke song to me. And I think it's an interesting album. I think it's much prettier than the last two. The first, I think, six songs are, like, stand together really, really well. I do feel like the album kind of ends at the Door and then picks back up at Ode to the Mets a little. Like, I don't really love the seventh and eighth track. But I'm pretty happy with it. I've listened to it a bunch. I can't say it's going to be my top 10 of the year, but I've listened to it a bunch. I listened to it this weekend because I wanted to. I think there's some interesting stuff going on with the co-writing.
We have to go back to that, because they definitely, there are some interesting co-writing credits here. They're basically, sampling some 80s hits on a couple of these songs.
And I mean, there's definitely an 80s vibe a little bit to the album, maybe because of that. But you know, I knew we were going to talk about this, and I was trying to figure out how I felt about it best based on my expectations, and I think I feel better. Like, I'm happily surprised, I guess, because I know critically it wasn't like a Laura Marling or even a Laura Fiona Apple that we just talked about, but I do think that it is a way better album than, let's say, Angles, and it's received similar reviews. I just think at this point, people either want the Strokes to do like their version of, you know, a complete pivot, or just stop, and they're not pivoting. But this evolution, I think, it's a much more cohesive album to me, and one that I listen more than Come Down Machine or Angles, for sure.
I've already listened to it more than those two albums in the past week. It's an interesting album to me. It's kind of, there's only 9 songs on it, but it sort of feels sprawling in a way, like a little bit all over the place on some of the tracks. And, you know, I wonder if Rick Rubin producing it had something to do with it being a more coherent album than those. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is that it sounds like they're happy to be there.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, it sounds like I was saying in the run up to it, I felt like it seemed like there was more confidence, or like they were a little bit more, like, maybe a little bit happier with the album that they were putting out there. And, I have problems with this album, but I also think it's largely like really good, and I think I'd agree with you that it's probably their third best album.
Yeah, and I mean, I think every track is on this album is longer than almost any track on this list. So yeah, I agree. It's kind of a departure for like how long their songs are, but maybe that's the evolution of their sound. You know, the Rick Rubin thing, like, I'm kind of questioning like what he did, honestly, because this feels like to me like I can see a little bit of, you know, the last Voids album had kind of similar aesthetic to like Bad Decisions and Eternal Summer a little bit. I just feel like it's closer to kind of the Voids production than it was kind of maybe the Past Strokes album, but
I think he's like Rick Rubin's like a basketball coach who, you know, isn't so much X's and O's. He's like managing egos. So yeah. I think that's probably what had a lot to do with it. Cause it seems like it's a fragile relationship within this band, and I don't, you know, they're saying that it's better now. So maybe it is, but it was probably just, that's probably what he's facilitating. You're not going to make the Strokes sound that much different.
Yeah. And like, I think the Strokes are probably, it seems like to me, it's the first album since kind of Room on Fire where they're happy being what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I think, you know, the first three tracks, The Adults Are Talking and Selfless and Brooklyn Bridge to Chorus, I think that's like a really great opening to the album. Those are, you know, some of the best songs that they put out in a really long time. Mm-hmm. I think the record gets pretty weak with Bad Decisions and Eternal Summer. Like those songs, Bad Decisions is basically just a rip-off of Dancing with Myself by Billy Idol. So he gets songwriting credit, but it's not done in a way that is interesting to me, or I just think that's kind of like, it seems like such a throwaway song. I like Eternal Summer more, and the way that Psychedelic Furs bit is part of the song, and there's like that song has a really great bridge to it.
Yeah, the bridge is great.
Like I battle with, I think about the Strokes in a lot of the, in a similar way to the way I think about the Killers, and I know they came out around the same time, and I know that both Brandon Flowers and Julian Casablancas are like sort of fascinated with each other, mm-hmm. and like their and their differences, but you know this would be like a strong Killers album where like there's like five or six songs that I actually like. I just think it's hard for them to, I can't imagine them coming together and making something that's great front to back, but
yeah,
but like I actually I knew that this album was interesting to me because the what was initially my least favorite song on the album has become one of my favorites, which is that second to last song, Not the Same Anymore.
Yeah.
It's just like a long song, and I didn't quite understand, like it just felt like the album was, because the first half of the album is pretty like upbeat and like goes by pretty fast.
Yeah.
But you know what this track really reminds me of, Nick, is I can't shake it when I listen to it now. It sounds like it'd be off of Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino.
That song. Yeah.
And it's kind of this lounge lizard like Frank Sinatra thing that almost that Julian Casablancas has going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really like Brandon Flowers, I really think that he has like a great voice and mm-hmm. is kind of one of the most unique singers and I don't know, melodicists out there. Like some of the stuff he does with his songwriting is so unique.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so obviously him, and I like when he lets it stretch out a little bit and really like steps up to the plate and like sings mm-hmm. really strongly. So that song really works for me.
Yeah, I mean, not that I don't dislike the end of the album, but you know, to your point, like from At the Door, it just kind of slows down, starting with At the mm-hmm. Door. But mm-hmm. At the Door is, I think At the Door is one of the best Strokes albums they've released in the past decade. I think like there's four songs on this album, and you can say these are the four best Strokes songs in the last 10 years.
Yeah, there's some people I know that ride for like a few of the songs on Come Down Machine. I haven't like listened to it in a while, but you know, I know some Strokes fans who think there's like that half of that album is really good too.
Yeah, I mean, in you know, you could say that the two singles on Angles are quite good. I think they're great Strokes songs. But you know, I don't pretend to know what's going on with them, but like I did feel like Angles and Come Down Machine were put out because they have a record contract they need to uphold. you know, I don't know that there was.
I noticed that this one is on Julian's label.
Yeah. So that to me means something. I don't know.
I think it's also, you know, the first track, The Adults Are Talking, it's in the first verse where he sings that we are trying hard to get your attention. right?
Yeah.
And it just feels like there's actual purpose. Like, for a band, part of the issue with the Strokes is that they always seem like over it, and like they're all, you know, they're so too cool to be doing with, you know, to be rock stars. So yeah. It's kind of like this is like a career, you know, they've been a band for 20 years. And so you kind of have to like treat it that way if you're going to, they still like have a fan, you know, a pretty big fan base and can do an arena tour and everything in the States. So, you know, might as well. I think with the band members all being like sober and everything, like maybe there's some realization that is strengthening the music, because you don't want to just keep phoning in records just to tour, and they haven't done much touring. So I think if they seem like they want to, it's too bad that with the coronavirus, everything's getting thrown off, because this could have been a big year for them.
Yeah, I know. The other thing, like, I wonder if, I don't know, you know, the artwork is that famous kind of Basquiat painting, but, like, I wonder if there's, you know, the U.S. version of this set, kind of the color scheme is similar, and I wonder if there's, an intention behind it.
For like kind of a back-to-basics sort of feeling?
Yeah, or, like, a reboot, or, like, a 2.0, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I got that vibe from just kind of everything about it. It just sort of felt like definitely a new phase. And they did say on stage, Julian said that, you know, they took the last decade off basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I agree. Like we could pick apart this record. I will be listening to it. It is like really fun to listen to. And like those like Bad Decisions is at least like, I always sing Dancing with Myself when that song comes on.
Yeah.
I don't know, like it's still like catchy enough that like the lower moments on this record don't drag it down at all for me. And I'm like, yeah, I have to say, I'm pleasantly surprised by it. I've never been like the biggest Strokes fan in the world, and but I have come to appreciate Julian a lot as a songwriter and singer. You know, particularly through solo stuff and Voids, and you know, I think he's just one of the more talented singers that we have in rock. So and songwriters, and the songs are really sharp on this album. So
yeah, I agree, and it sounds really good. And I think the guitar playing is just as sharp as it used to be. I'm happy with this. I'm quite happy.
I mean, yeah. It is. Longer than the 9 tracks would suggest, and it goes by, I think it's 45 minutes long, but it feels more like half an hour to me. It goes by really fast. It's like really enjoyable to listen to, and all the, you know, the playing is really tight, and yeah, I think most Strokes fans are really happy with it.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, once you from the first song, it kind of feels like, oh yeah, here we go.
It's been long enough now that you don't like expect, is this it, you know, 2.0, you know, ever again, and they can kind of just let them do their thing.
Have you listened to Is This It since this came out?
Have not. Have you?
See, me neither. I just keep wanting to listen to this. I don't feel like I need to listen to Is This It right now.
Yeah, that's a really good sign.
I was afraid that I'd be like, oh, yeah, this was cool, but, like, it really makes me want to listen to, like, their good stuff, you know? Yeah.
But, I like all the little winks on here, too, like, on Ode to the Mets, where Julian says, ask Fab to come in with the drums, I think it's on Brooklyn Bridge to Chorus, where he, you know, sings about the chorus is coming up, or, you know, something like that. It just sounds like they're having fun and like getting along with each other. And I think, you know, some bands do really well when they hate each other, and, you know, some don't. And I think the camaraderie and like the sort of feeling that they were a gang, something that, you know, a lot of people really liked about the Strokes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's nice to see again. It seems, I mean, at least from afar, it seems like they're happy. I mean, even like Albert Hammond Jr.'s Instagram is all about this album. So,
And it's funny. One other just thought I had about the Strokes in 2020 that I think is kind of funny. Like, they seem like a big band, and they have like a cult following for sure, and certain kind of music fans are always interested in them. But also, like, I heard some sort of just, you know, normal people who sort of pay attention to music and react to like the Strokes having a new album. They're like, wait, what? The Strokes? It's not 2002. Yeah. Like, for some people, they're an artifact of a certain time, is, I guess, you know, and then they do have a fan base that is interested in kind of their evolution and everything, but there's some people who didn't even know that they're still going on.
I think people also, to some people, they become a kind of a joke.
Well, they, I mean, they really, like, did almost everything they could to, you know, scare away their fans for a decade. Or at least not scare them away, but have them become, you know, disinterested or kind of bored with them.
Yeah, that's true. But if you stuck with them, you might be pleasantly surprised 20 years later.
Well, speaking of pleasantly surprised, I do want to talk about one other record with you on the show today. Mm-hmm. This is a solo record from a member of one of our mutual favorite bands, but not one of the members that you think. This is Radiohead's Ed O'Brien putting out his first solo album under his initials, EOB, and it's called Earth. He is the rhythm guitarist in the band. He's the tall, handsome, cool-looking one. I've always been a big fan of his stage presence. He's one of the more like animated members of the band. And his vocals are, you know, probably second to Tom. You kind of recognize his singing. I think he and Tom were both choir boys growing up. I think I remember reading that somewhere along the line. I can't say that I was like very excited to have, you know, the first solo record from Ed O'Brien after Radiohead has been a band for, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
But I have to say, I like this album quite a bit. There's something about it. I think there's something so, like, professional about it to me, where it's, I read an interview with him where he's saying, like, nobody wants, like, there's no interest in a shitty album from Ed O'Brien. Like, there's just, why put it out, you know? Like, and, you know, this has gotten a pretty good, it's on Capitol, it's getting, like, a pretty big release. It sounds more like Radiohead than I expected, also, to be honest. There's a couple of songs, I think is the first song, Shangri-La, definitely has some Radiohead elements. And then a couple of songs towards the second half of the album, I think it's Olympic, that really reminds me of Radiohead. And also, speaking of Laura Marling, she shows up on two songs on this album, the last song being kind of a duet called Cloak of the Night. Also 9 songs, around the same length as the Strokes album. Did you get a chance to check this out at all, Nick?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, I have to say. I mean, I think we had this internal joke where, like, especially on King of Limbs, we didn't know what Ed O'Brien did.
I know. Yeah, there's no guitars. He's, you know, he's always been the kind of like the rock guy in the band.
Yeah, and he's got the backup vocals. And, and, you know, I think I didn't know as much as I thought about Radiohead after listening to the song, because to your point, there's a few songs that sound like a Radiohead song, and I'm kind of like, I wonder how much of the songwriting we have to attribute to Ed that I kind of dismissed.
Yeah, I had that feeling too. Like, oh, so is it these kind of Radiohead songs? And I've seen it mentioned before. If I had to compare the overall sound of this album to like an era of Radiohead, I would probably say "Hail to the Thief."
I was gonna say that it reminds me of "There There." Like, I feel like he wrote "There There."
Yeah. So maybe that was the most Ed album of, because I think he's the sole songwriter on this album. They're all the tracks are credited to him.
It's quite good, I have to say. And I don't know, I it's a great surprise, because I think you and I were both joking about it for weeks, not expecting too much, and turns out it's not bad. at all. Yeah. I mean, it's more than that bad. I think it's quite good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple albums that it sort of reminds me of in ways. There's a real kind of like 90s forward thinking 90s rock thing going on here, which is, I guess, is the definition of Radiohead. But you know, he mentions it in most interviews that he was really inspired by the Primal Scream album, Screamadelica, and there's definitely some kind of ravey, like early 90s Manchester vibe to some of the tracks. But also, like, the thing that really stood out to me was how much it reminded me of Octoon Baby by U2. And, you know, I think Flood produced this album, who also engineered and worked on that album and has collaborated with U2 and Nine Inch Nails. And, you know, a lot of the kind of more recently, like Foles, I know he's worked with Murder Capital. Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of works with sort of industrial, like, but like arena rock, you know, like arena alt rock producer. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think he does a really good job on this album. It's also like there's a variety of stuff going on here. I mean, I say it reminds me of Octoon Baby, but like in some places it's pretty folky. And towards the end, it's a little, there's like some more funkier songs. There's the ballad with that's just acoustic guitar with Laura Marling that closes off the album. So I think that's what made it work for me too, is it felt so varied. It really feels like a complete album. The more I listened to it, I was not expecting I thought I would listen to it and it would be like, oh, I get it. Like, you know, he's good, but the songs wouldn't be as good as they are, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kept my attention more than some Tom York records.
Yeah, and he spent some time in Brazil recently, and that was the inspiration a bit behind it. And it felt like I could definitely get some like bossa nova elements to some of the songs. The other thing too is, like, you know, to your point at the beginning, is I kind of forgot how good of a singer he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a really nice voice.
Because you get it kind of overshadowed by Tom York's song when they're in Radiohead, but it's, I just forget how good Ed O'Brien's voice is.
And I think some of his singing on that first track, Shangri-La, almost, it sounds a bit like Tom York. And, you know, even I notice, like, singers who, even if they don't necessarily sound like their voices aren't the same, they can sometimes sing in a way that is really close. Like I, Martin Gore and Dave Gahan in Depeche Mode, like sometimes Martin Gore sings and he always sings backing and his voice is a lot higher and of a lot higher register and not as powerful as Dave Gahan's, but there's something about it. Like when he sings sometimes they sound similar to each other. And part of it is like, you know, it's the same band, obviously, but yeah, he's got a nice voice. It's distinctive, does sound like Tom in some places, but you know, they've been in a band for so long together.
Yeah, I guess there's some kind of influence there.
yeah, a little bit. So we're just waiting for, what do you think? Do you think Colin Greenwood has something good up his sleeve?
He's the only one, right, that hasn't released something.
Yeah, I mean, Tom York is going to be a solo artist probably for the rest of his career, even if Radiohead keeps going. And Johnny Greenwood is one of the best film composers alive. Mm-hmm. So the bar is kind of high for these guys. I mean, Phil Selway, the drummer, put out two, I think, pretty well-received solo albums. And, I mean, he's the drummer. Yeah. So just getting there is pretty cool. I'm glad this EOB album exists. I'll definitely keep listening to it. It's like, it really is, if you're looking for kind of a snapshot of like the last 20 years of alt rock in one album, it you know, you could do worse than this album.
For sure. No, it's something that I'll probably listen to in the next couple of days again, for sure.
Yeah, both this and the Strokes albums are, I found them to be like very easy to listen to, and you know, it was where something like the Fiona record is, it takes me more like time for it to, like, you know, I like to have, make sure it has my full attention and everything. I actually think the EOB album would probably be a pretty good cooking album. I haven't tried that, but you know what I mean? You got your highs and lows, and it's also just, it's very pleasant. It's very well produced, and just, I think he is just a, you know, he's a professional musician. Like, it just sounds like the work of somebody who, like, knows exactly what they're doing.
What about, I was thinking about the comparison to one of those, what is a movie that if you're watching cable when you had cable is on TBS or like TNT on a Sunday and you're just like, oh yeah, I'm watching this. That's kind of like how I feel about kind of the Strokes new album and this EOB album. It's like, oh yeah. It's something you just keep putting on, you know? Whereas like the Fiona Apple one is like, oh yeah, you know, some obscure film that you really love, but you can't quite watch it twice in the same year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like more drawn to those kind of things in terms of when I talk about, you know, my favorite pieces of art ever, but there is something to be said for like the things that you just really find pleasure in and just keep putting on and on. And a lot, we talk about that sometimes with end of the year list, because how much it matches up with what we actually listen to the most. And does that mean that we like something more than this more difficult piece of art that, like, I love Terrence Malick and Tree of Life, but
the first
thing I haven't seen his new movie is 3 hours long and in German. And, you know, you got to set aside the time for that. You can't just throw it on like it's another episode of Ozark.
Yeah, or yeah, exactly. Which I love Ozark.
And so. I don't know if there's something wrong with finding pleasure in watching that show because it stresses me out, but I do.
How do you think you would fare if you were Jason Bateman's character in Ozark? Like,
ooh,
how
would you? I really identify with his character on Ozark, to be honest. Not that I have been laundering money for a drug cartel, but I do feel like if I were, I would want to do it like him. The man is always getting stuff done. His life seems like a living. I've only seen the first two seasons of the show, but his life, and he does kind of break towards the end of the second season, but his life seems like a living hell. Just, it's so stressful at all times, and he's always just like driving the minivan somewhere to go talk to someone to make sure that this happens, to get something done, to keep his family from getting like brutally murdered. He keeps his cool. It's really impressive. I would aspire to be like him.
How many hours before you would lose your shit?
Over under would be one, I think. I don't think I would make it. I would take the under on 1 hour.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty amazing.
But yeah, I mean, I think I just wanted to wrap up and say, like, we were talking about all the, you know, the quantity of albums that we're interested in the past few weeks, and it's like, if they're all going to be as good as some of these, like, I think I was ready for Ed O'Brien and to a lesser degree the Strokes to kind of like have dismissed these albums and kind of move on to something better. But even if like these projects are better than I would be expecting, then I don't know, this year could be out of control.
I agree. I'm looking forward to the rest. We'll see. Yeah, I can't wait to go listen to some music after this.
I know, get you fired up to see what else is out there. But yeah, with that, Nick, till next time, we have plenty more to talk about, and hopefully come back to the Fiona album a little bit too.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.